And good evening. Welcome to Tom Harris USA, episode number 88. This is Tom Harris in beautiful Chicago, Illinois, and it is hot out today. It's been hot out for the last few days, actually, and we are getting into our summer weather pattern here. After having a few weeks of kind of alternately warmer and cooler weather, some days you need a jacket, some days you don't, it now kind of feels like we're smack dab in the middle of summer. I guess it's a good change. But, you know, hot weather, it really isn't my thing. I don't deal with the heat very well. And this is why I don't live in Florida anymore. And it is uncomfortable today. Getting used to the sudden shift from temperatures in the 50s to well above 80 has not been my favorite transition. Of course, with the sudden heat, we have a lot of pollen in the air, and we have a lot of the trees are blooming now. So, of course, it's allergy season. Hooray! My favorite time of year, as everybody is sure to know. So if I do sound a bit nasally, more nasally than usual, then you know why. It's because of the pollen in the air. And the honey locust trees are in bloom, and we have milkweed in the air, and it's just one of those times that just makes it kind of uncomfortable here in the city. But that being said, we're at episode number 88, so hooray for that. And that means that we're 12 episodes away from Tom Harris USA episode number 100. Now, over the past few weeks, I've been kind of pondering what to do for Tom Harris USA episode number 100, because obviously 100 is kind of a big deal. 100 editions of anything is longer than I've ever spent on any project before. And I've been trying to think of things and trying to think of things. And I've been thinking about sort of what I started out to do with this program. Why I started doing a program to begin with, to share my thoughts, to share my opinions, to share things with you, the listener, and maybe help to develop critical thinking skills. And for all of that, I think I've been reasonably successful. Now, there aren't maybe as many listeners as I would like, but that's all well and good. I mean, because every listener I have, I value a great deal. So what I've been thinking of is what to do for episode 100. And one of the things that I've been thinking about doing is doing a format change. And maybe once I hit episode 100, take a couple of weeks off, take a little vacation, because that is probably going to correspond roughly with my trip to Minnesota in August, and take a little bit of time off, maybe a week or two, and then come back with a new season of Tom Harris USA with some differences, different format, maybe some different topics. And one of the things that now I also do a live program, and I know I've plugged that on the show before. The live show is at unitedkingdomradio.co.uk at 10 a.m. Central Time Saturday morning, which is 4 p.m. in the UK. And the live show has been quite the ride so far, and I'm enjoying having this sort of immediacy that you get from live radio. And I had been thinking way back in the very beginning of the show, I'd say probably about episode 10, I actually started thinking about doing the show live. And as I thought about it, I realized, well, there's no way that I'd be able to do Tom Harris USA live. Figured out that, you know, in order to talk about the more serious topics that I like to talk about, that the live format really wouldn't work that well. And I've come to believe that that is probably true, that probably the live format is not best suited to this. Now, if you've heard my live show on United Kingdom Radio, you would know that it is a much more casual show and much more lighthearted show, to the point of actually sometimes being rather silly. And that's okay, because, you know, I enjoy it, and I enjoy having that back and forth with people and all of the calls and all that. But what I've been thinking about doing with this show is having a bit of a format change and not exactly introducing a live element into the show, but introducing perhaps a bigger variety of voices into the show. So I have a feeling that what's going to happen is that when Tom Harris USA episode 100 comes around, that will be the last episode of season 1 of Tom Harris USA. Now, how would a season two of Tom Harris USA look? To be honest, I don't know. And I think in part that's going to depend on all of you. I would like to get some of you out there, and even the people who I don't know who you are, more involved in the show. And that means that if you have a particular topic you want to hear, or a particular topic you might want to talk to me about, have a conversation with me about, that maybe we can set that up. Because, you know, there's this wonderful thing out there called Skype. And I use Skype, of course, when I do the live show. And I find that the sound quality is quite good. And it would be a giggle, quite frankly, to be able to sit down with people and talk about certain topics. Maybe it's a topic that you know a lot about. Or maybe a topic that you just feel very passionately about. And so I invite anybody out there, anybody and everybody out there, if they want to talk, have a dialogue with me on this program. And when I say that, I don't necessarily mean people who want to talk about atheism or talk about debunking psychics, the things that I've kind of gone on about the program. But I mean any kind of a topic, whether I've talked about it or not. Because, of course, I've talked about a wide variety of things on the show anyway, a lot of things that have to do with my regular life and not necessarily rationalist sort of topics. But if somebody is very passionate about something, you know, even something like stamp collecting, it still might be interesting to have a discussion on that topic. So I have to say, if people are interested, they should let me know. And the way to do that is to email the show. And the email address, as always, is tom@tomharrisusa.com. Now, I do stress the conversations that I would be having wouldn't be live. They would be pre-recorded like the rest of the show. So you'd have a chance to prepare stuff. You would be able to go back and correct things. If you misspeak or if you make a mistake, you can go back and you can fix it. And nobody will ever know that you made that mistake because of the wonders of editing. And I have often said, you know, that I edit myself, you know, fairly heavily. But, you know, when I do edit on the show, I never edit for content. I always edit for length. And that's kind of the way I do it here, because I do want people's viewpoint to really come across and what they actually are saying to come across. So I would like to talk to people about this sort of thing and set something up and get some more voices on the show and get some more involvement in the show. I think that this program has the potential to be a lot more interesting if we have new voices, new points of view on the show. So that's kind of what I'm thinking about for Tom Harris USA Season 2 coming soon to an RSS stream near you. And, of course, this doesn't mean that I'm unhappy with the show the way it is. If I don't have somebody to appear on the show with me, I can easily just, you know, talk about whatever the way I do now. But I want to try something new and something interesting. Kind of keep the show stirred up and keep it from getting too much in a rut, because sometimes everybody gets in a rut. Okay, so I have a couple of emails here from our good friend, or perhaps I should say our good enemy, Robert the Viking. Hello, Robert. Robert has this to say about Tom Harris USA number 87. He says, "Dear Tom, I am pleased to report that I'm not being held by the Daleks. It's just the way I walk, okay?" Well, does that mean, Robert, that you can't climb stairs? Because I know Daleks have some problem with that. "However, it would be a pleasure to partake of a beverage with you, providing you can find a pub that serves either grappa or pasito. Dear listener, I am not turning evil. I am evil, and the purest form of evilness, for I am he that walks the path of the forest, a path that has but one fork in the path. And with each there comes a choice. The choice laid before one is to accept the wonders of the dark side. Is it not much more fun to dance around naked under a full moon than to sit upon some damp and drafty cloud? For it is written upon the words of the wise one that I shall call down upon you all the fruits of the earth and fertilize the soil with the seeds that come from within the bowels of the earth. For it is you and Christopher that has tried to shine the light upon the facts, and in doing so has shown us all that there are many stains and cracks upon your reality, and that should have remained in darkness. Dear friends, embrace the darkness and join the elves, trolls, and the elves of the skyboats as we take back the earth. The Daleks, dear friends, are also with us on our quest and will help swell the numbers towards our dominion of the earth. Have no faith in that Doctor Who, for he is rather like a chocolate teapot. Oh, well, I don't know about that, Robert. It seems like the Daleks, to me, wouldn't necessarily be the best people to have on your side. I mean, they don't have a very good track record, do they? Anyhow, Robert continues. To be serious, I would like to take this opportunity to thank all of you for your concern about the situation here in Iceland. We in the north are pretty much unaffected by the events, and yet the farms in the south are having a hard time. This is lambing season, and with finance stretched to the almost breaking point, they did not need this. We have teams of people leaving to help out with the clearing away of the ash. Your prayers, if you believe, would be most welcome. And if you do not follow a god, then your understanding would also help. For to know that others understand actually helps a lot. Robert Louis Pels. Well, thank you very much, Robert. And I suppose that this is one of the elements of this whole Iceland volcano thing that people have kind of overlooked, is a lot of people have concentrated on the effect that this cloud of ash has had on people who are flying to Europe. But the effect that it's having on Icelandic farmers in the south of Iceland is not to be underestimated, folks. And if I were in Iceland, I mean, I'd be right there with a shovel to help, because that is a serious deal. Iceland isn't a place that's really rich in resources, and they have to make do with what they can. Of course, they're in future years, the ash will help to fertilize the soil, and you know, things will become, you know, more back to normal or whatever. But for the moment, people are suffering, folks. So it is good to keep in mind the struggles that people are going, the very real struggles that people are going through in Iceland right now. And I also have here another email from Robert. This one a bit more lighthearted. And Robert writes, an important statement from the Office of the King of the Elves. Operational activities concerning the volcano Eyjafjallajökull will cease forthwith. This is a gesture of good faith and should be accepted as such. We have taken this action following a period of quiescence by those who should have known better, naughty boys. A group of specially trained elf marines abseiled down into the crater and with pots of homemade Cornish treacle and plugged the volcano. And on a footnote from the Office of the Elves, we invite tenders for Icelandic homemade toffee at very competitive prices. Our tickle trolls, which have been well-fed and rewarded for their efforts, have returned to the mountain stronghold of Snæfellsjökull. Other operations, which have been undertaken in our fjord of Eyjafjörður, will continue on only in a researched and training exercise. This concludes this message from the Tiddy Augie office. Well, thank you, Robert. Now, you know, saying that I'm exposing the stains and the cracks of the world, well, you know, maybe that's true, Robert. Maybe that's true. But if you don't know where the cracks are, and you don't know where the stains are, then how do you avoid stepping in those cracks and falling down into the pits? You don't want to fall through and fall all the way down into Niflheim, do you? No, I mean, at least I don't. Anyhow, thanks for your emails, Robert. It's always very good to hear from you, and I'm very glad that things are going okay where you are. Okay, moving along then. The other day I was listening to podcasts at work, and I often do that. In fact, I listen to most podcasts at work. And I was listening to an episode of Scott Mitchell's podcast, and this was something that he was calling the small agenda. And this was sort of a pseudo-conversation he was having with Tom Wiles, also known as Trucker Tom. And you've heard both of these gentlemen on this show before. And they were talking about this whole Arizona immigration thing that's going on right now. Kind of a controversy which has been started by this rather draconian new immigration law that's been imposed upon the state of Arizona. And what this law does essentially, or what it did before the law actually changed it a little bit, they had to, because of the massive outpouring of criticism, they actually did kind of make some small changes to it that make it slightly more palatable than it was before. But it's still kind of a problem, because what this law does is that it allows local law enforcement to challenge the citizenship of anybody who they think looks like they might possibly be an illegal alien. Now, there's a number of things about this law that are very troubling. First of all, what does an illegal alien look like? Obviously, they're not looking for people who look Canadian. They're not looking for people who, say, look Asian. They're looking for people with dark skin, dark hair. In other words, people who look like they come from Mexico. Now, needless to say, Arizona has a large population of people who are of Hispanic descent. The proximity to the Mexican border is obviously the reason why that is. They've been there for a long time. They've been there since before the United States was there. So, and the vast majority of these people are born and raised here in America. And I guess the supporters of this bill, their whole point is, well, what harm does it do? It's no big deal if we card random Hispanic people. They might think differently, though, if they looked Hispanic. In fact, I would dare say that if this law targeted people who looked Canadian, they would be screaming bloody murder about the government taking away their rights. They said that about the health care bill, for gosh sakes, that the government was taking away their rights. This is incredibly hypocritical. On one hand, they're screaming about losing, you know, the government taking away rights. On the other hand, they're more than happy to have people harassed by law enforcement simply because of their perceived ethnicity. And that's really the whole point. Now, thankfully, we have something in this country called the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution prohibits unreasonable search and seizure. And I do believe that this law, if it goes to the Supreme Court, which it's likely to do, will be struck down by the Supreme Court, even this heavily conservative Supreme Court that we have now, because racial profiling on the basis of perceived ethnicity is unreasonable. At its core, it's unreasonable. But that's not really what I want to talk about. I don't want to talk about this immigration issue from this side of things. Remember a few episodes ago when I was talking about the conspiracy theorists, and I was talking about their demonization of those who they perceive to be their enemies. So in other words, they would demonize people who don't buy into their conspiracy theories. Or they would demonize those who they believe are perpetuating the conspiracy. The Nazis blame the Jews, for example. And today there's a lot of people who, you know, they'll blame the Illuminati or the International Zionist Conspiracy or, you know, any number of, you know, the New World Order, all these other things that don't really exist. Even if there's absolutely no evidence to support a conspiracy. I think that this way of thinking falls right into that mindset. Because here you have a situation where a lot of the country is struggling. We have an unemployment rate that's near 10% in most of the country. And in those situations, when times are tough, it frequently happens that a particular group of people is going to be singled out to be the scapegoat for those who feel as though they've been targeted by a particular class of people. Now, in our country right now, there is a particular tendency on the part of, you know, I hate to say it, but primarily the right wing in this country, to blame the economic problems of this country not on the economic policies of the last 30 years, which is really where this blame belongs, but to blame it on illegal aliens. And that's, of course, is an unfortunate human tendency to scapegoat people who really don't have a whole lot to do with it. Well, there's been a very interesting article posted on one of my very favorite sites. It's called factcheck.org. And the title of this article is, Does Immigration Cost Jobs? And it actually cites a number of studies that are done by economists that suggest that not only does illegal immigration not hurt American workers, that it may actually stimulate the American economy. And these studies go back years, of course. Now, of course, the meme that's being put out there by the anti-immigration people, it's really to them, it's sort of oversimplified to being a point of simple mathematics. So, for example, there actually is something in this article. It says, it makes it sound so easy. 8 million illegal immigrants are working in the U.S., 15 million unemployed American citizens and legal immigrants. We could cut the number of unemployed in half if we just booted out the illegal workers. But the numbers don't really work that way. And what the economists have found is that the jobs that most illegal immigrants take would not have existed if there wasn't a very low level, very poorly paid workforce to take these jobs. If that workforce weren't available, these jobs wouldn't exist at all. It's very unlikely that people who were building cars, say, or working in a steel mill for $30 an hour are going to go and pick onions for $3 an hour in Southern California. Think about it logically. The reason why the farmers hire these cheap workers to begin with is because some crops are better picked by hand. Things like grapes and apricots, things that are easily damaged by machinery. It's more cost effective for them to have people handpick these things by machine. But if the cost gets too high, they're still going to have it done by machine because there's going to reach a certain level of expense where it's more cost effective to have the machine do it. And I don't see that these millions of American workers are going to want to work for $3 an hour the way an illegal immigrant does. So that's basically the argument that these economists are making here. These jobs, hand-picking onions, wouldn't exist if they couldn't get that labor for cheap. Otherwise, they're going to automate the system and put all of those workers out of work. Now, the article does go on to cite the study and say that there is a very small number of people who are adversely affected by illegal immigration. And those are people who don't have high school diplomas, who are very poorly educated, who don't have good work skills, and can only do these sort of very low-level, poorly paid jobs. Those people are hurt by illegal immigration purely for the fact of the matter is that the illegal immigrants will work for less money. And the way I see to solve the problem, now, not to get, again, back on this topic of this illegal immigration, because that's not really what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about scapegoating. But it seems to me that the way to solve this whole illegal immigration thing is to crack down on the people who hire them, because we know somebody is out there hiring them. They're hiring these gardeners and nannies and fruit pickers. And the politicians won't go after the fruit farmers who are hiring these people. There's a reason for that. They're politically connected. The agriculture industry is a big deal in most American states, and that would even include places like Arizona. So there's always going to be a demand for a very, very cheap workforce. They're not talking about employers that pay a living wage that people could actually support a family on. That is, unless your family wants to live in a one-room apartment with no central heating and no running water. But it's interesting now that these studies have been published, and they are available to look at. You can go look at the article in question. Once again, it's on factcheck.org, and the name of the article is Does Immigration Cost Jobs? I definitely would recommend it. It's a very well-cited article, and you can go back and look at the various articles, both on the right and the left, who talk about this issue. And a lot of this stuff was compiled back during the Bush years. And it's really interesting to see. And you look at this stuff and you understand why immigration reform was definitely not a priority in the last administration. Or indeed any administration, honestly, for the last 50 years. And the economists have shown. It's because illegal immigration isn't the problem. They're not the ones who are dragging down the economy. And to say they are is what I've been talking about. It's a scapegoating tactic. It's a distraction from the real problem. And the real problem is economic policy. We've had 30 years of trickle-down economics, and we're seeing now the fruits of that trickle-down policy. When you create a huge gap between the wealthy and the poor, the haves and the have-nots, the wider the gap, the less stable the economy is. The economy depends on a strong middle class, the consumer class that buys lots of goods and services. The rich do buy goods and services, but there's a lot fewer of them than there are of the middle class. There may be a lot of poor people, but they can't afford to buy a lot of goods and services. So it makes sense to have less of a gap between the very rich and the very poor. But trickle down puts all the money at the top in the hopes that somehow this will trickle down to the rest of us. And it doesn't work that way. The sponge of greed sucks up everything that might otherwise trickle down. And you end up with an unstable situation. This is what happened in 1929. The gap between the rich and the poor back then was huge. The other thing that's being ignored here is the fact that illegal immigrants, even though they're working for these pretty pathetic wages, are still buying goods and services. They're still buying gasoline. They're still buying cigarettes. They're still buying groceries. They're putting money back into the local economies of the place that they're working, and they're not taking as much out as they're putting in because the wages that they're working for are substandard to begin with. So I think that there's really something to be said, as usual, for doing the research. This whole illegal immigration thing, you know, the reason why it's such a big deal is because people like to blame other people for their problems. They don't want to blame themselves. They don't want to blame the political party of their choice. They certainly don't want to blame their own lack of skills or their lack of initiative. They would rather pick on somebody who has nothing to do with it. But it's an emotional response. And there are people who take full advantage of that emotional response for political purposes. This is why you have so many people who are openly admiring this draconian Arizona immigration law. This is not an argument based on reason. It's an argument based on emotion. And yes, Trucker Tom, based on resentment. If they base their arguments on reason, there wouldn't be an argument to begin with. And the fact of the matter is that the scapegoating is a really dangerous situation to allow ourselves to get into. This is something that we do not want to allow to control government policy. And there's a number of really dramatic historical reasons for that. This has happened at numerous times before in history. It's something that we have failed to learn from each and every time. In the 1930s, you know, Germany blamed its economic woes on the Jews. In the United States, in the 1860s, we had the refugees from the Irish potato famine coming in large numbers, and they were discriminated against because it was felt that they were taking away American jobs. You know, these were the same sorts of situations. You have uncertain economic times, and at the same time, a convenient group of people to demonize, whether they be immigrants or some other minority group. The religious right has blamed gays and lesbians for things as diverse as 9/11 and Hurricane Katrina. There's a lot of examples that you can give. The email address for the show, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is tom@tomharrisusa.com. I always do like hearing from people, and I do like having people join the discussion, so please feel free. So it looks like I'm starting to run out of time, actually. Thanks for listening. And as always, I do appreciate any feedback that I do get. Don't forget the live show on United Kingdom Radio, which is every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Central Time, which is 11 a.m. on the East Coast of the U.S. and 4 p.m. in the U.K. That is over on United Kingdom Radio, and it's a Skype-in show. It's a bit more lighthearted and less topical and more just having fun and having a casual chat. But, you know, of course, you can call in and talk about any topic you like. And the Skype address for that show is United Kingdom Radio. Okay, so it looks like it's about time for me to go. As always, thanks for listening. I do appreciate all of you out there who take the time to listen. And as always, from a very hot but beautiful Chicago, Illinois, this is Tom Harris signing off. We'll see you next time.